As far as I know, this is the news, according to me. Good morning, everyone. It's February 3rd. We're halfway through the month. For those of you who sleep the rest of it, I have some hot chocolate with me today. It's 16 degrees outside where I'm at. Welcome to wintertime in Indiana, northern Indiana. Yeah, it's a little frosty out there. Supposed to get up to a whole 34 degrees today. Don't know if that'll happen or not. Tomorrow's supposed to be up to 36. It'll be the last day above freezing for a week. It's supposed to snow tomorrow a little bit. So now you know everything about my life. Let's talk about your life. So we have, I'll kind of jump right into this today. It's more and more clear to me that we are in a very difficult situation approaching. We're approaching a very difficult situation for our country. There is a book, there's a YouTube channel back up here a little bit. There's a YouTube channel that is really good. The guy's name is Trevor Loudon, and he has a YouTube channel, and the name of it is Counterpunch. He does a really good job of, let me see if I can find the name. Tolly, what was the guy's name that he was talking about? There's a guy that wrote a book back in the 50s. He actually defected, this guy that wrote this book that he was talking about. This guy was from Russia, had defected, came to the U.S. He actually defected in Europe, and U.S. took him in. Let's see if I can find it here, because I really do want to know the name of the guy. Counterpunch. Just put that in there. Trevor Loudon. There it is. Yeah, that's him. Yeah, this is the guy. Just got to pull it up because otherwise it's not gonna tell me the whole description unless I get it up here. But the guy's name is Ayatollah, I think it is. Anatoly Golitsyn. Anatoly Golitsyn. He wrote this incredible piece, this book, and I can't remember the name of the book. You just have to look up Trevor Loudon's page and find out more about it, but it's worth listening to. He's a little bit of a dry. The show is a little bit dry. I think he's Australian or New Zealand. I think he's from New Zealand, and he has a little bit more of a dry approach to doing his reporting. Unlike myself, I am very wet. In fact, I soak myself in the sink before I come in here, and then I put a wet towel on my head as I'm doing the show. It's quite a sight, actually. You should see it. But you won't, because it's not a video. The fun thing about his show, or the good thing about his show, is he's very thorough. And he knows his stuff. He knows his history. And he is definitely a... He understands the concept of liberty and the fragileness of our liberty and the state of the republic. Once you achieve a state that has liberty within a republic based on I can say it. It's early, I know. Wait, I got to take some hot chocolate here. Inalienable rights. In other words, rights that can't be taken away from you without due process. rights that you're born with. God-given rights, I would prefer to call it. When you have an understanding of that, you are always in a position, once you've achieved that, a republic based on those rights. In other words, the people are in charge of the government. Once you establish and achieve that position, which the founders had put that stake in the ground, this is what we're going to be. They've founded our identity on that day. And then we had to kind of live it out like a young child growing up and kind of figuring out who they are. They had the personality, just didn't know what that meant. Of course, then they get in their adolescent years and they have their issues and they do stupid things when they're teenagers. And then they rebel and sometimes they get senile in their old age. And I think that's where we're at now in this country. Well, we've forgotten a lot about what we're supposed to be doing. And what happens, and this mostly happened during the 50s, the rise of the Soviet Union, the manipulation with the communist China regime, the CCP, and how this all happened. And he spells it out very clearly in this book. He predicted about 200 different things in terms, because he was involved in a high-level position in the Russian government, in the Soviet Union. And during the whole, if he's alive today, he's very old. I don't know if he's still alive or not. We need to find out more about this guy. But I'm going to talk about him anyway. It was interesting because when he originally started he wrote all this stuff down. He wrote this book way back, and I think it came out in late 50s or early 60s. And the CIA, of course, being the brilliant minds that they are, and the all-knowing CIA, we give them too much credit. First of all, the CIA, I mean, this is a side note. This is much like the Navy SEALs. They're not invincible. They don't know all and see all. That's the impression they want you to have. The Navy SEALs, while they're tough guys, don't get me wrong, don't want to mess with them. That's the one branch of the military that almost everybody else in the military, they straighten up when the SEALs are around. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, the Rangers, all of the special forces in whatever division of the armed forces you're in, they're kind of the elite of the elite in terms of, and they're not always just, it's not always about brawn either. You can be a SEAL without being the brawny tough guy. They have intelligence. They have all kinds of other things, positions in the SEAL team. So special or kind of unique in that they are more of an autonomous soldier. They have, they'll put them out in the middle of nowhere, and they're kind of given the freedom or the liberty to make decisions in the field on their own. So they can't always just be taking orders every minute. So it's a very unique combat unit in that respect. So, but they have this mystique, and they have this this reputation for being, they can hide in your backyard and then sneak in and get you in the night, take you away. Nobody knows. Well, no one else in the home knows that you're even gone. That's the reputation they want to have. That's the mystique that they want to, because that strikes fear in, the people, and they could do that, but it's not that, they're not ninjas. Okay, they can't. And the ninjas are the same way. The ninjas had this mystique about them. Same thing. They'd be afraid of them. But they're human beings. They're not bulletproof. They're not indestructible, and they're not that sneaky. They're sneaky, but I guarantee if they're hiding up in my backyard, my dogs will find them and poop on them. Okay, so just don't even try it. More hot chocolate. There's probably one here in my office behind my chair, and I don't even know it. But what do I know? So they ended up the CIA, you know, the brilliance of the CIA has this this idea that this guy was a nut, this Anatoly Kaminsky guy, and they think he was a nut. So, first of all, he had about 200 or so, according to Trevor Loudon. Anatoly had about 200 predictions. Not really even predictions. He just said, these are the plans of the Soviet Union. These are the plans of Mother Russia and China, of the communist regime. And it's, he kind of alludes to the idea that basically the Russians and the Chinese are pretty much lockstep. Now, there is a misinformation campaign, I should say disinformation campaign, to lead people to believe, and this is according to him, that that there's no way China and Russia would ever work together and to serve each other's interests. This is not as clear as some people think. First of all, there was a major meeting of all the communist leaders, all the communist nation leaders back in the 50s. And he was there. This guy, Anatoly, he was there. And he spells out exactly what he heard and what he saw and what their plans are. It's very interesting how this all came about, but they realized that if they let the Soviet Union appear to crumble, which it did, that there would be a flood of money from the West to help rebuild infrastructure, help things reestablish in all the countries that were part of the Soviet bloc. So Trevor explains this much better than I do. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because I'm just going to repeat everything he says. So if you get a chance to listen to it, it's the title of the video on YouTube is called Ex-Soviet Agent Who Warned America About Today, the Importance of Anatoly Galitsyn. I don't know how to talk, I can't pronounce these crazy names. So he went to through this whole thing, and interestingly enough, everything he has in this book has happened exactly the way he laid it out, that they had planned on doing it. This is a part of a basically a 50-year plan, and it's taken them 70 years, but they're right there. They're right here. They're at the moment. They probably didn't plan on Reagan and some of the other things that have happened within the time span that pushed back some of the things. Now, even Reagan played into this thing. The fall of the Berlin Wall and some of those kinds of things were, it was all part of this whole thing. Long before Gorbachev, this was all part of the plan. So now, so about 180 of these 200 things have come to be that he said. And of course, the things that are left in that haven't happened yet are pretty crazy. And we are, I think, at the doorstep of where that is going to be. And now, what you're seeing right now with what is happening at the current administration, and I listened to this thing last night. I listened to it again today, and I kind of fell asleep this morning when I was trying to listen to it. It's kind of early, and I was trying to listen to it again. I need to listen to it and take some notes because he's very thorough about some things, and I'm listen, as I'm listening to this, there are some dots that are being connected in my head. I have dots in my head, and then they're connected. Not very many of them. It's more like a, it's not really like a pegboard. It's more like a, just a random set of holes. So they're in my head, and some of the things that are happening now, some of the things that have happened, especially with our government, the back ties that a lot of our politicians have with China, the Maxine Waters thing with her, here's the thing. A lot of politicians do this thing where they pay their family or friends lots of money because they can't pay themselves to do things in their campaign. So all this campaign money that comes in helps to pay people around them. And then that money gets funneled back into easy life for them. And eventually, you know, they get certain things, and or their people around them have certain things. They're very well taken care of. Let's just say they're very well coddled within that little nest of people around them that have all these, all this money that has come back through all these channels. So, and they, you know, a lot of times, like I've said before, they have offshore accounts where money's floated around. And that's why a lot of times when they take vacations, they go outside the country because they use that money. They spend that money when they go outside the country. Or they just move it around, do other things with it, invest in certain things and build their wealth up and do whatever. And a lot of it's done through, there's one of the major things that they do, and this is why a lot of the elites in the ruling class are into artwork. You'll see a lot of expensive, not good artwork, just expensive artwork. They'll create some kind of crazy piece of art that they claim to be art. It's the weirdest looking thing you've ever seen or the most disgusting thing you've ever seen. And they'll spend, you know, $300,000 on it. And it's not worth that, but that's how they launder their money. So that's how they move this money around, is in artwork. That's one of the ways. There's a lot of other different ways too, but that's, you'll see a lot of this happening among the ruling class. And oh, guess what? Speaking of that, the reason I'm reminded of that is because Hunter Biden is now going to be in charge of some kind of curation of some kind of art, he's doing something with some kind of art thing. Yeah, what a coincidence. Because, you know, he's a fine connoisseur of art. He knows all about the oil business and... more hot chocolate. But the issue in the Soviet Union and China, it's very interesting. There is a definite relationship between the two countries. And I think it's very critical that we understand and recognize that communism and a kind of a fascist mix of communism. People like to say, well, democratic, you know, democratic socialism. Bernie Sanders is all into democratic socialism, not just regular socialism, but democratic socialism. He knows that socialism in and of itself is hand in hand with communism. And call it what you want and define it however you want to. It is a very evil form of government. It all sounds good. And you will hear them saying, you'll even hear people saying, well, Jesus was a communist. The early church was communist. Because, you know, that's how you take care of the sick and you do all these things. No. That is not what God had intended at all. First of all, the early church, they did live communally. The early church lived communally. They had all things in common. In other words, they gave everything. Ananias and Sapphira found that out the hard way when they hid something from the church. They weren't part of the commune, and they lied about it. It wasn't that they kept something, it was that they lied about it, and they dropped dead in the New Testament church. We don't like to talk about that in the New Testament church. That happened. It's in Scripture. And the point was that they lied to the Holy Spirit. It's not a good idea. Not a good idea. So we had back then, but the thing about the early church was that it was voluntary. You volunteered to be a part of it. It was not mandatory. Now, lying to the Holy Spirit was also voluntary, and it had consequences. So we had, a lot of people say, well, you know, that we do have to do the, these are all things that, you know, we gotta take care of the sick. And you guys, you Christians on the right, you don't know what you're talking about because we need, this is a more biblical, more compassionate system. No, it is not. Not at all. First of all, think about this. The people who are pushing this system are the same people who want to kill children in the womb. So if it's so godly and so holy, why is that happening? Why is that a part of the platform, that there's so much compassion there?
Well, it's compassionate because those are unwanted children. How you know, they'd be growing up unwanted.
No such thing. It's an unwanted child. The reality of this is that the communist system or the socialist system, same thing. You argue with me all you want on that, it's the same thing. If they're controlling the means of production and they can tell, they basically start to regulate, this is where it heads, it goes down this path. They start telling everyone, you have to file for a permit to start a business. And then they can tell you what kind of business you can have. And the government might say, well, we need someone to manufacture paper clips. So you are now going to manufacture paper clips. But I don't know anything about paper clips. I'm really good at making dog dishes. Well, you're going to make paper clips because that's what we need. That's what society needs. That's what our communist system needs that. Our society, our social society needs that. So you're serving your country by making paper clips. Okay, I'll make paper clips. And by the way, we're not going to pay you for those paper clips for a year. You need to make them for a year. And if you don't make them, we're going to throw you in jail. That's more of a fascist, kind of a socialist, kind of a... Now you realize the Nazi party, not Nazis in German... It was the National Socialist Party. It was the Socialist Party. And they voted them in. So they were democratic socialists, folks. That was the Nazi Party. Just because you vote in the socialist leaders doesn't make it any different than any other kind of socialism. That's just stupid. By calling it socialist, well, we're going to call it democratic socialism. Okay, you can call it fairy tale socialism if you want to. You can call it mermaid socialism if you want. It's still socialism, just that the mermaids are in charge now. So you have to realize that the road we are going down, and it's not always where we are. Everybody's kind of willing to accept where we are. Okay, well, we'll go ahead with this then. But they're not done. And this gets back to my point of how the liberty that we were established, that was established 200 years ago, the liberty that we had established and the republic that we had established 200 years ago puts us in a position of defense. Because now we are, and this is every time the politicians would take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. The Constitution is an offensive weapon. It is a defense that we have of the Constitution, a defense of our liberties and our rights that the politicians are sent to Washington to uphold. not to create more rights or to impede on the rights that we have or figure out loopholes in the way that our negative liberties have to be changed into positive liberties, as Obama would say. Negative liberty. That's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. I have liberty, but it's very negative. Yeah, okay, whatever. So we have a system of government that is bent on intruding into our lives because they feel the need to take care of us. Now, when you're young and you're barely making any money and you've got a mind, basically a skull full of mush, you don't have much of a brain. It's still developing until you're like 28 or 29 or something. And you're out there trying to make your place in the world, and you're not making $1 million. And maybe you are, in Zuckerberg. There's very few of those people around out there. When you're struggling and you're trying to make a living, I guarantee, just be patient with yourself. You're going to go through some struggles early in life, your salad days, as they say. If you continue to endure and you continue to persevere, you will eventually reap a harvest. And some reap much more than others. What I have observed, here's what I have observed in my lifetime, my short, long lifetime. 50 years is, 58 years is not that long. Trust me. If you're in your 20s, it's going to go by fast. And here's what here's what I have observed. For the most part, in general, people typically don't start really making their most productive years, in my opinion, are their 50s and 60s. Some people even into their 70s, depending on what you choose to do for a living, depending on what kind of skills you acquire throughout your early 20s and 30s. I've observed it in my own family. I've observed it in the family of people around me, families of people around me. We become more refined, more skilled in what we are able to do, and we become more valuable in terms of the workforce and the workplace, at least if you have made an effort to do so. Hopefully you have. Now, if you're a part of, well, I'm not going to get into all that, but let me just say that. Just be patient with yourself, because you're probably going to be making much better money, or at least be much better off and have a handle on how to manage your funds and manage your money and what you do make. And when we're younger, we have a tendency to live beyond our means, or try to, at least guys do. I don't know. Some people do. I was one of those guys. I just thought I needed a whole bunch more money. I went into debt. Never should have done that. Life would have been very different, and it would have been very meager initially. But I would have been building real wealth instead of working for somebody else the whole time. And it worked out okay, but yeah, I'm not so sure it was the best route to go down. So I ended up, but I have observed that in life. So yeah. Keep pursuing those goals and visions that you have in life. And in the process of doing that, you might stumble across something that actually does well. A lot of times, here's my opinion on this. I've observed this a lot of times in my own life. This is just kind of my own personal journey. Yours may vary. Your experience may vary. A lot of times God will get my attention with something. He'll say, hey, look at this over here. Try this out. So, I'll think, okay, I'm going to go down. I got this kind of, idea that I'm going to try that for an occupation or a hobby or career or whatever it is. I try to learn how to do that. And I'll head off in that direction, and then it takes a turn to something else. Well, I would never have taken that turn to something else had I not been on the way to this other thing. So who am I to figure out how God gets you from one? It's the whole, you know, God moves in mysterious ways. And yes, he does. There are decisions that you will make today. And that's really all we can do every day is make decisions. You know, we have choices. Life is a bunch of choices. And, you know, choose what time you get up, what time you go to bed, what time you eat, what time you, what you eat, what you don't eat. You know, whether or not you let your hair grow long. It's just full of choices. And, you know, getting wisdom on making those choices is critical. And sometimes we just stumble into something because it's just who we are. We just make a choice that's not good or good, or maybe it is good, or maybe it's, you know, something that, whatever it is, I don't know. So I say all that to say that the whole thing of liberty and how it's a position of defense, we now have, you know, and every time you compromise that a little bit, because people are willing to compromise, willing to give up a little bit of liberty for the sake of security or to make life easier. Because here's the deal. With great liberty, I don't know if anybody's ever said this or not. I've kind of said it myself a lot, kind of like the whole thing of a truly sovereign nation is a nation of truly sovereign individuals. The, you know, with great liberty comes great responsibility. And the more responsible you can be for yourself, the more, you know, self-aware, the more self-reliant you are, not in a bad way, but just your ability to take care of yourself. Now, maybe you're in a situation where you can't. That's fine. If it's beyond your situation that you can't, you know, we all need help. And that's the beauty of this whole thing is the more liberty I have to take care of myself, the more liberty I now have to help my neighbor personally. If government gets involved in that process and says, we are going to take care of your neighbor because we're going to take your money by force and at the point of a gun, and don't pay your taxes and see who shows up to take your taxes, they will be armed. So they're going to take your money before you even see it, and some of it you haven't even seen because it's in your employer's portion of what they pay. And they're going to take that money and they're going to do whatever they want with it. And then they're going to give it to somebody else that they see fit. Whoever jumps through the hoops and applies for it, or whoever falls into a particular identity category, whoever has the particular, just whatever their whim is, whoever's going to vote for them, that's who's going to get the money. More hot chocolate. I'm getting all stirred up. Speaking of stirring it up, I probably need to stir up my hot chocolate. So we have the situation now where they want to take your money. They want to be the benevolent ones with your money. This is where it gets evil. This is not charity. Now, I know that there are people out there who say they don't mind paying a few more shekels. They don't mind paying a few more dollars in taxes in order to help take care of those in need. I don't either. And there is a place for a government safety net because not everybody has a place to go to be taken care of. I get that. But then we get into this entitlement mentality. And that's what they even call it, entitlements. People think they're going to depend on Social Security for their retirement. I got news for you. You are not going to be doing well if that's going to be your only income, unless you've got other wealth somewhere that you got packed away. That's not going to do it for you. The danger of all of this is that government squanders it. Okay, all the money they take in Social Security, you're not paying into a savings account. You're not paying into a lockbox where that money goes someplace and it's saved for you. You'd be much better off putting that money in a savings account. If you could do that, but again, with great liberty comes great responsibility. If you want to save all your life and then have that money for retirement, good for you. That's true, responsible liberty. You've been responsible with the liberty that you had. But guess what? People don't do that. Especially when they're kind of given this false sense of security that the government's going to take care of them in their old age, they're going to get Social Security. And everybody's talked for years about how Social Security is going to go bankrupt. And it is. Every year it's bankrupt. Because the money they take in is the money they pay out. There's no savings there. It's the world's biggest Ponzi scheme. And it's the biggest racket. But if you try to do a Ponzi scheme, they will arrest you for that. And rightly so. So the politicians that are in this defensive position of liberty are continuously compromising. And they chip away. And the progressives from 1913 on have had this goal of what they've called a 100-year plan. And that 100-year plan is now up. It's 108 years now. And they're pretty much got the noose around our neck. And we are going to see. And what the sad part of that is the general public does not even recognize it. They don't even see it. Because we're so used to government programs and the government intrusion that has happened little by little to the point now where you can hardly turn around without getting a permit from the country, from the government. And some cities are worse than others. But counties, states, different states are worse than others as well. It's here, folks. It's at our doorstep. And the type of government we have now in terms of the way our defense is set up with other countries. Now, you've heard of other countries. I've heard it said since I was in high school. America is too powerful to fall from without. It will fall from within. In other words, it will morally decay and all kinds of other things. Probably the case. The division that they want to sow between. And our nation's pretty well divided. It's basically 50-50. According to the left, it's 50-50. If you went around and polled, asked certain specific questions to every person, every adult in the country, you would find that most of the country aligns more with conservative values and conservative ideals than they do with the left. But because the left has the media, they only have to own a certain percentage of the media and have the narrative going in order for everybody to follow along and believe it. You would think, looking out there, all you have to do is look at the counties, the way counties voted in the last election. This is a red country. The blue counties are the ones that changed this election, this last election, 2020 and 2016. It's just amazing how in the rural areas you'll find that pretty much people are much more conservative, much more right leaning, much more liberty minded and patriotic minded. They don't find it offensive to be called a patriot or to love your country or to have a flag in your yard. The sad part of this is that we have now basically developed a mindset that says that the government needs to take care of us. Now, when you're younger, I was getting to this, and I'll get back to it. When you're younger and you're going through your salad days, you feel like, yeah, the government needs to help. I'm struggling. I need help from the government. What are you willing to give up for that? Because that comes with a price. The very people who you work for probably are not poor. I don't think I've ever worked for a person who was poor, who was on food stamps. That hasn't happened. And yet we try to vilify the rich. Some of them are greedy. No doubt about it. So don't work for him. Go start your own business, if you're so smart.
Well, I can't because I don't have any more.
Hey, I was in grade school. I was selling pencils to other kids. I had a pen repair, a pen repair business. I had a box full of old pen parts, little case with all kinds of pen parts in it, and I would fix people's pens in class. When I was in, I think it was fourth and fifth grade. Actually, it was fifth and sixth grade, come to think of it, because I wasn't fourth grade. And I used to walk back and forth to school 20 miles in the snow, uphill, both ways. Actually, there was a couple mountains I had to climb in between there as well. And I had to fight off a pack of wild donkeys every day. Every day. While carrying my snare drum. That was a big drum for a little kid to carry. I had a snare drum and a big case. I had to carry it back and forth to school three times a week. It's ridiculous. They didn't think about, I guess we hadn't invented the wheel yet. So I would have to, and I had to crawl over a bridge. I did have to go over a bridge. This is a big, tall bridge, old bridge. They've replaced it now because it was about to fall down. I think I wore it out going back and across that thing every day. But I would walk past a candy store every day. I walked past a candy store, guys. I was in grade school. We're talking 10, 11, 12 years old. I walked past a candy store every day. Now, granted, remember, this isn't back when you could just punch a button on your phone and candy would show up at your door from Amazon, you know, in 24 hours. This was kids from all over the, you know, out in the country. I mean, my town had, I think, a population of 325 people. There were 210 houses in my town. I know that because I had a paper route. And it was a free paper that went out to every house. And I delivered them for about a year. That was a lot of fun. On my bike. Woe is me. That's because my pen business dried up. So did my candy business. What I was going to say is, I would go past the candy store every day, and I would pick up candy. I'd buy a lot of candy, and I would take it to school to the kids who didn't walk past a candy store every day, because it was the only candy store around. And a lot of them, their parents wouldn't even take them to the candy store or buy them candy. Because they weren't supposed to have candy, so I was providing them candy. Oh, I bet they wondered why their dental bills were so high. So they had this, all this, I would buy candy, and then I would mark it up a little bit. Of course, this is back for, like, when a nickel would buy you a bag of candy. And I would, you know, take my nickel in there. I'd fill up a bag on the way home from school, because they weren't open on the way to school. So on the way home from school, I'd fill up this bag of candy, and what I didn't eat, the next day I would take to school and I'd sell it. And then I would come back the next day and buy some more. I was known as the candy guy. And then I would also fix pens. So as I'm fixing their pen, I would say, hey, how you like some candy? Yeah, 5 cents for that candy bar there. So it was a racket. That was a racket. I'm amazed I didn't grow up to be I'm not going to say. Certain kind of salesman. I'm just going to say, because if you're one of those salesmen, okay. I don't want to lose any listeners. I can't afford to lose any listeners on this channel because, you know, I get paid so much for this. I get paid by the listener. Right. So I have where was I going with that? So just, you know, just do what you can. Get a side hustle. Deliver pizzas. You know, do DoorDash. Do Uber. Which is, those aren't actually that great ideas. I got to tell you, if you're out there driving your car around and you think you're making money, unless you're driving somebody else's car, if you're paying for all the maintenance on that car, I guarantee you, you're running that car in the ground. If you think you're making a lot of money. I mean, you might make some, it might give you cash flow and you might be able to make some quick quick coin just to be able to do something, that's fine. Don't make it your full-time career unless you've got... Now, if you're able to do your own maintenance work on your car, if you're a mechanic and you can do your own maintenance and you've got a couple of cars, you've got a spare car that you can use and you've got, you know, you treat it kind of like a little taxi service and you know how to manage your funds and manage your maintenance bills and you can buy fuel cheap enough, man, knock yourself out. It's all about what you spend. When you have a business, it's keeping your overhead low. And that's the key to any real business. When you have a high overhead like that, you might think you're making money, and actually in reality, when that first bill comes for the, you know, for your brake job that you can't do, that I, you know, I'll spend $100 doing a brake job and you'll spend about $700 or $800 doing a brake job. That's a huge, you gotta drive a lot of people around to pay that brake job off. So that's the kind of thing that, you know, it spirals down into nothingness after a while. So you just have to kind of, you know, plan those things out a little bit. Think about it before you get involved in it. Not that you shouldn't, because you're going to learn something. That's how I learned. I spun my wheels for a long time doing stuff. And yeah, that's why I'm drinking hot chocolate now. So that's about... did I come full circle on this whole thing? So what I'm basically saying is this thing about the Soviets and what's going on with our country and how we have allowed liberty to slip from our fingers and our republic basically is going away. And the more you hear people talk about our democracy, and now you have an administration in charge that is rabidly angry with a president who had the audacity to step in and actually bring about an economy that they said couldn't happen, to bring about peace deals that they said couldn't happen, to even just in the very thing of getting a vaccine that they said couldn't happen. They said it would take a miracle. It's not possible to have a vaccine. We had two. And now there's other stuff out there now. And there's even more. On top of that, there are more therapeutics. There are some therapeutics now by Eli Lilly that are incredible. They're going to bring the death rate of this, even with the new strains of the virus. The therapeutics are probably going to prove out to be more beneficial than the vaccine, because of the fact that they actually have no side effects and can be administered when a person gets the disease, gets the virus, and literally will drop the death rate on this thing and the aftermath of this thing, side effects of the virus itself, down to nothing. And in the process of all this, check into the statistics right now on the seasonal flu. Just do that on your own. I'm not going to give you any numbers. Take a look at the seasonal flu and see what has happened to it. We have decimated that. It is gone. So, well, they just say flu-like symptoms, but that's what the virus has, flu-like symptoms. And then how, here's a question for you. Can somebody answer this for me? Here's the question of the day, and this is for someone to answer for me. When you do this test for the COVID-19, the COV2 or whatever it's called, CV2. When you do that test, does it tell you what strain you have? How are we all of a sudden finding new strains? Is the test different? Does the test come back with, oh, this is COVID something else? This is COVID-19-4, 19-0.5. How'd this happen? Because we didn't even have COVID tests to begin with out there. You know, that had to be ramped up. Tests weren't available. Now all of a sudden we've got new strains, and the test we have is showing that that's the new strain. Are people getting tested for the different strains? So when you go in for your test, are they, I don't know. Somebody please explain to me how that all works. Does the swab turn blue if it's one strain and pink if it's another strain, and it turns gold if it's another one, and it flashes with, you know, little glitter things falling off of it if it's another? I don't know. How does it work? How does that work? Tell me how that works. I want to know, because I'm an inquiring mind. Because now, supposedly, we all of a sudden we have the strain. I guess is in the country now. It's here, and there's now they're saying there's more than one other strain. Like there's like two or three now out there, coming from all over the country, all over the world, and it's spreading like wildfire. So yeah, I don't know what's going on there. Even though it's in the midst of a lockdown, and everybody's wearing two or three masks, but I'm not going to get into that again. So, oh, by the way, this whole thing about wearing two masks, and I guess the science behind why it's a bad idea is because one mask, what ends up happening is the more restriction you put on, of course, it just makes common sense. It just makes common sense, you know, that another layer is going to give you more protection. Well, no, Mr. Fossey, no, it doesn't. Because here's what happens. The more restriction you have of that air flowing through the fabric, the more the air is going to flow around the outside of the mask. That's the problem with the science. That's why a true N95 mask that's not made in China, or that's not a crappy one, seals very tightly around your nose and your mouth, and it very well form fit. And It's a very restrictive mask. It takes a lot to breathe through it. If you've ever worn one for more than an hour, you'll understand. It can kind of make you dizzy after a while. It's like, so the issue with the double mask, or wearing something over the N95, or wearing an N95 over a cloth mask, is that the more restriction you have and the more material you have over that other mask, the more opportunity there is for a deformation of that mask, thereby making air go around the outside of it more. And now it's more aerosolized as well, because you're breathing moisture into the mask, and then that moisture is vaporizing. If you could see it you'd know. If it'd be like, if you go outside and on a day like today where it's like, well, this week we'll know, because it's going to be down in the single-digit numbers in the next week here, starting Thursday. I guarantee if I go outside with my mask on, you will see my breath going in and out of the sides of my mask if I wear two of them. And you'll see freezing particles of water on the front of my mask because of all the vapor going through there. And that's where the virus lives. It lives in the vapor, because that's where it lives. Well, I'm looking for, yeah, there it is. It's in the vapor. It's coming for you. Just when you thought it was safe to put on a mask. Yeah. Put on two. No, put on 12. Put a bag over your head and tie it shut. That's the only surefire way. I'm just waiting for him to say that. Yeah, okay, well, it just makes common sense. It's just common sense to put a bag over your head. And, you know, it just makes common sense to provide another layer that's impenetrable. And to breathe from a scuba tank. That's what you got to do. Yeah. Actually, that probably is a good idea. I think the next time I go out to the store, I'm just going to wear my scuba tank. And walk around. Or maybe I'll get a snorkel. I'll get a snorkel and a mask. And then I'm going to put my, or, you know, face mask, and I'm going to put my my little N95 on top of the snorkel, and see if anybody says anything about that.
The mask has to cover your nose and mouth.
Well, isn't it more important to cover what's coming out of my nose and mouth than it is to cover actually my physical mouth? So anyway, oh my goodness, folks, we've got quite a life to live ahead of us here. And I believe Rabbi Rick will be in the house later today. If he's not, it'll be me by myself. And if he's not going to be here, I will have a bunch of sound bites of things that people have said over the past week that I think are pretty clearly important. So if you get a chance to listen to today's show, you'll hear Rabbi Rick and I will be talking about cooking omelets on my forehead and boiling his potatoes. And then we're going to, and we'll be discussing, and I think maybe possibly the TNA to Me Singers, the News According to Me Singers, will be in today to do a little recording. They got a new little ditty that they've been working on. So maybe they're going to be in today to do that. If you have a chance, you can tune in this afternoon. Hopefully, I've got some slow internet issues here, and it by the time we do the show and I get it uploaded, sometimes it's a little bit of a long shot. It takes a little while. So just be aware of that for those of you who are anxiously waiting, sitting there on your computer with your nose up against the screen, waiting for the next edition of The News According to Me. Just make sure that you be patient. Be patient with me. Because it's, I have to upload a lot of bits and bytes. So, God bless everybody. Keep praying for our nation. Pray for our leadership. And pray for me. I'll pray for you. We'll pray. We'll get through this together. We're all in this together. God bless everybody. Have a great day.